Cisco Experience Podcast, brought to you by Jim Herlihy. Independent commentary from a Silicon Valley perspective for a global audience, featuring newsmakers, thought leaders, and authors. Season 24, Episode 13. Utilize the Rent Anything app. Talking with founder Jason Fairborn. Over 80 million Americans use sharing economy services like Airbnb, Uber, Instacart, DoorDash, among others, on a regular basis. The sharing economy, or access economy, enables people to share goods and services with strangers through a third party's digital network. The ease and flexibility to conduct a trade safely, anytime, anywhere, has propelled tens of thousands of would-be entrepreneurs to share their homes, vehicles, and expertise through the click of a smartphone. And Utilize is the latest app that allows anyone to rent out almost anything they own. With us today is Utilize's founder, Jason Fairborn. He joins us from his office in Provo, Utah. Hello, Jason, and welcome to the show.
Hi, Jim. I really appreciate you having me here.
My pleasure. Jason, please take a moment to tell us about your career as an entrepreneur.
So it goes back quite a bit, actually. When I was young, I didn't know what an entrepreneur was, but looking back, I've always been an entrepreneur. But more in my professional life, I was kind of an entrepreneur for hire for the most of my career, building businesses in emerging markets as a way to alleviate poverty. Mm-hmm. So I had clients around the globe that would, for example, the Nike Girl Effect and the IRC had hired me to go build businesses to help Sudanese refugee women get out of poverty and out of prostitution rings into regular formal employment. Mm-hmm. And so I had a number of clients around the world, started around 30-ish businesses in 15 different countries as an entrepreneur for hire. So I spent most of my professional career being an entrepreneur, which ultimately culminated in raising a small fund and running an incubator in East Africa for 5 years before starting Utilize.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Very impressive. And tell us about your academic background.
I undergraduate in sociology. Graduate work was in econ, London School of Economics, focusing on development management and international political economy of sorts. And then I ended up spending some years teaching at a university, Brigham Young University, in their business school.
Very impressive. How did you come up with the idea for Utilize?
Honestly, it was my 14-year-old daughter's idea. I had mentioned that we were living in East Africa. We took a five-year sabbatical. We lived in East Africa and we started a number of companies there. And in that process, we homeschooled our children. And every quarter, we'd go visit a part of the world that they had kind of studied as part of their curriculum. After this 5 years was up and my kids had been working in the businesses, I had them do very practical work, part of their education as well. And we were sitting down for business class that day, and I sat down with the kids and said, "We're moving back to America. Why don't we start a family business next time? Let's do something together." And, you know, my kids were young. They're going to come back and go to public high school. But my 14-year-old daughter, she said, "Dad, do you remember when we were traveling to other countries?" She's like, "Remember when we were in Tokyo and you said, somebody here has to have a telephoto lens for my Canon camera for our ski trip. Or when we were surfing up in the Arctic Circle in Norway and you only had a soft top surfboard, but you wanted a regular surfboard. You thought somebody in this village must have one." And she started repeating words that I had been saying over the years as we were traveling and staying in Airbnbs and using Ubers back to me as like fodder and as examples of business to be created. She said, "Dad, why don't you create a business that connects people to each other's stuff so then people will have access to items they need but won't have to own them?" And so out of the mouth of babes, my 14-year-old daughter figured that out, and she wrote a little business plan on it. And I was like, "I think this is bigger than like a family." Like, I thought they were going to say like a food truck or something that they could kind of work and run while they were in high school.
Sure.
But it turned out like this is a bigger thing. So I started like commuting back and forth to the U.S. and just holding focus groups and doing typical market analysis. And so like, yeah, like we do consume a lot. We're excess. We're very wasteful in how we consume and utilize our resources. Thought that this was a big audacious goal to like kind of try to tackle, to continue along the ways of like using business as to make good positive social change. And so we thought, let's go for it. And so Utilize was born.
That was the concept.
Yes.
That was the idea. Where are you today with Utilize?
So we're still in the early stages. It takes a little time to write code and build a product. But we started our beta test 4 years ago in 2019 in Utah. We did our MVP pilot there for a few years. We've grown to around 30,000 users there, a little over 4,000 transactions, which doesn't sound a lot, but for being basically a bootstrapped company, we've got good traction and we're able to show some product market fit. Recently raised a small amount of capital pre-seed round to allow us to open up two new markets. And so we opened up Hawaii for tourists. There's a number of tourists that will travel to the island. They'll go to Costco and buy items that should be durables, but they use them for a week and they end up in landfills. And there's a lot of waste there. And then plus a lot of potential users coming to the island that could be creating revenue for families on the island. So the dual purpose there. And then we're launching, just last month, we launched the Bay Area outside of San Francisco. So a few weeks old there.
Of course, I'm in San Francisco. Well, I split my time between San Francisco and Sonoma County. So if I wanted to rent something, I could open my Utilize app and rent something here in the Bay Area.
Yeah, that's correct. We're now live in your area.
Oh, okay. Well, that's exciting. I'm going to do that later on. Jason, at this point, let's do this. Many of our listeners are entrepreneurs. Many of them have their own startup companies or want to start up a company. You've been down this track on a number of occasions. And most recently, of course, with Utilize, you've been down this track here in the United States. And now you're in markets in Utah, here in the Bay Area, in California, and even in Hawaii. You've raised funds, you've beta tested the concept. Walk me through the most important components in a venture capital pitch book. For the benefit of our listeners, when you're trying to raise capital, you're going out to the venture capital community and you have to present to them what your idea is. Let's walk through some of the critical subjects that a venture capitalist is going to expect to see in your pitch book. Let's start with your vision and your mission. So what is your vision and what is your mission with Utilize?
So really our vision is, or help facilitate an alternative to current consumption. And so like our mission is to be the ultimate platform that allows people to have that option or that alternative to rent instead of owning. We see that there's transition in our culture and society, with particular with millennials and younger, that people are desiring to own experiences, not things. But it's not possible at this point in time. Really, if you wanted to go mountain biking, most of the time you have to like own a mountain bike or have access to a mountain bike some other way.
Right.
Go paddleboarding. You want to make a pizza in your backyard, you have to own a pizza oven. Well, now on Utilize, you can rent that pizza oven and throw a pizza party with your family or friends. And so we're trying to be that alternative so people can still own those experiences without having to own items. So that's our vision. Yeah.
Okay. The next question is, what's the problem that you're trying to solve? I think you've addressed it in your first response, but maybe give us a little more granular detail about the problem that you're solving with the Utilize strategy.
Sure. I think ultimately one of the largest problems is the way that we consume. Saw just a week and a half, 2 weeks ago with Black Friday, we had record-breaking sales. It was somewhere between Black Friday and Cyber Monday. It was like 22-point-something billion dollars spent, record-breaking. We're consuming at a rapid rate. And we know that if the rest of the world was consuming the way Americans consume, it would take five Earths worth of resources to ply the world. But even the way that the world consumes now, a lot of predictions are around 2030, we will need 1.5 Earths worth of resources to our needs. And so we know that the way that we're consuming at this pace is not sustainable. We can't continue to pull resources out of the earth forever for everything as rapidly as we're growing. So there's that environmental concern for us. The other concern is that budgets are getting, there's really three value propositions. So that's one of the value propositions, is the environment. The second one is that the economy is tight for people. They drive around, like where you're from in San Francisco or in South Bay, you'll see homes with four or five cars out in front. Multiple generations are starting to live in a home. Mm-hmm. The garages aren't even, there's no space to even park a car in the garage in most cases. You know, so we're consuming a lot, but like life is becoming very expensive. And so this is also an alternative to allow people to enjoy things without the added cost. And then the third value proposition would be for people who do have those garages full of items that they can earn money off the stuff they own. Because the good news is that collectively, we own just about anything. You can take the neighborhood you live in and go a few blocks, and there's probably the same number of power tools in people's homes and garages as there are at the local Home Depot if you added them all up. And so we have it all already. There's no need for us to continue to purchase more. And the, you know, the carbon footprint of that 3-pound drill, how many tons of resources did it take to get that 3-pound drill in your house?
Tell me, what is the market size of this opportunity that Utilize is trying to tackle? Of course, you are already up and running in Provo, Utah. You are also up and running in Hawaii. You're just opening an operation here in the San Francisco Bay Area. What is the market size of this opportunity for Utilize?
I think that's a good question. And I know a lot of startups have a very specific number, and I don't. I know that the sharing economy is projected to be $600 billion by 2030, and it's growing. The sharing economy is growing very rapidly. However, with Utilize, what we're doing is, I like to think of it as a greenfield space. We're not just like trying to capture a percentage of the potential market that's out there. We're trying to create a new market opportunity for people to rent their items out and turn every home into a little micro business. It's a new space altogether. But I mean, the rental space alone is in the $80 billion range annually in the U.S. alone. There's a large market possibility there. Added in green space, we want to switch that capital into the homes of users in their homes to earn that company instead of businesses.
Mm-hmm. Of course, any new business it depends on its team. Now, of course, you and your wife, as co-founders of this company, you're leading this team. Tell us about your team and the ability of your team to execute on the mission and strategy that you've outlined for us.
I'm actually the most proud of our team. Obviously, it's not done by any one individual. It's always a team effort. But the interesting thing is, when this is very different from any other startup I've had in the past or startups I've sat on boards of or consulted, one very unique thing that's happened to us when we started Utilize is we've had people knocking on our door asking if they can be part of it. And so for the first 2 years when we were building product and getting ready to launch, every one of our employees worked 100% full-time for equity only. So essentially, all of our employees were basically our initial investors of sorts, putting in their time in lieu for equity in lieu of pay, which is very unique to get a full team like that. And so we were able to be very selective and picky with who our team members are. And every one of our team members, I mean, their pedigrees, you know, they all have MBAs. They're all coming from like very strong professional backgrounds that have had success in other parts of their career, which allowed them to take a few years time off without salary. You mentioned my wife's co-founder. I actually have another co-founder who was a technical co-founder, and he had an exit. And I was just consulting with him on how, because I'm not a technical co-founder, like how to hire developers, who should we bring on, and should I use a group, outsource a company to build the website? And he came back 2 days later and says, I had an exit. I have several years runway. If you want a co-founder, I will come be your CTO and build it.
Oh.
And I have a story like that for every team member we have currently today has worked for Strictly Equity at one point in their life cycle with Utilize. Very, very successful individuals.
Well, I think you've answered that question as regards traction. I mean, it's rare to have such a strong team that has executed successfully in other assignments and other companies to come aboard and essentially to forego a salary and to take their compensation in the form of equity in the company speaks to their confidence in the promise of your mission and your vision. Let's talk about the path to profitability. Again, an investor, when you go out there and you talk to investors, you know this better than I do, but when you go out there and you talk to potential investors, they want to see, what is your path to profitability? What is your path to growing revenues and sustaining the revenues and building those revenues? Obviously, as you move into newer markets, that's one of the ways that you do that. But what is your path to profitability for Foodalyze? And what has it been so far? What will it be in the future?
No, that's a good question. And honestly, this is a very difficult question for us to answer in many ways, at least in a way that like most investors want to hear us talk about it, simply because we're building a two-sided marketplace. And to have that, we have to have we call them owners and renters, mm-hmm. and they're playing two roles. And sometimes it's more like a dating app where somebody may be an owner and they list items, but then they end up renting from somebody else. And people play both sides. So it's not as true two-sided as like an Airbnb or Turo, for example, where somebody owns the car and somebody rents it. Mm-hmm. So in that process, our focus today is building the platform. We have to have enough users on the platform within a geographical location or some other way to measure a micro community. It could be like through a corporation or something that could have like hundreds of users or something. But we need to have like a micro community where we have enough liquidity, enough items in the market listed for rent that there's liquidity. And so the first step is, like, will people list items and can we onboard people? And what we've found within, like, if we can get around 300 listings within around 100,000 person population, then the flywheel runs by itself and it just organically grows at that point. And so when opening up Hawaii a few months ago, the real interesting thing is the last 2 months was the first time obviously we haven't been out of Utah, but we've had more IDs and more accounts created outside of Utah in Hawaii than we have in Utah, which is a 3-year mature market. Mm-hmm. And that's coming off a very low dollar spend. So we can see these trends that a little bit of time and very little market spend that things are starting to get listed. And then those are the leading indicators. And it's about 3 to 6 months later that once you get that liquidity in there that you start to see the transactions following. Mm-hmm. So in a new market, if somebody goes and lists a power drill or a pressure washer or a trailer, they don't always see a transaction day one.
Right. And
depending on how far we are into that, deep into that market, you know, it could be several months or it could be one day. Mm-hmm. We've only been open in the Bay Area for a few weeks now, and there's already been several transactions, even though we haven't built that level of liquidity into the market that we would like. We don't have the number of listings already, but there's been transactions happening, which is an indicator for us that it's a ripe market, because roughly 7 million people in the greater Bay Area.
Correct.
And we have around 200 listings. So to find people that went and organically listed something and somebody else went and rented it from them on several occasions already is a great indicator to us that there's a demand or need in the market. So we're at this pre-seed level. Obviously, we have revenue, and we're post-revenue because we have it built into we baked it into our model from day one, because I do know from previous experiences that people may say all day long that they like something, but until they're really willing to put a dollar towards it, it doesn't mean a whole lot.
Right.
We are taking our percentage cut as we go. And so we do have revenue, but to get to profitability, we need to be much larger. We probably need to be national. And the road to that is we have a couple go-to-market strategies. Part of the reason of opening these two markets was to create the playbook of how we do expand nationally. So it's not just haphazardly growing. It's been more of a focus on like using this as a test to learn how to grow quickly versus just trying to go quickly into these two new markets, if that makes sense.
Let me come back to capital. And you mentioned that you had successfully raised seed capital. Could you give us a sense of how you went about that process and where do you look? And I'm sure there are many eager listeners out there who are entrepreneurs who are starting up their own companies who will be all ears. So where did you look and where were you successful?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. And I think, honestly, Jim, you could do a whole podcast on this alone. It's quite the process. Honestly, like, we're looking to open another round the end of Q1, and I'm starting to work on that now. I usually plan out about 2 to 3 months of my time. That takes almost mass of my time a couple months before to like just lay the groundwork,
sure, and
the foundations to like raise capital. It's a lot of work. So I start with, I have a spreadsheet of roughly 500 VCs.
Mm-hmm. Can you repeat that? How many again?
500.
500 VCs. Okay.
Yeah. And I start by going through these VCs and I rank them, mm-hmm, based off of like, do they invest at the stage that we're interested in? Do they have a similar thesis? And I go through and I start vetting them out and I start ranking them. And then by the time I have them ranked, I start going through and seeing, well, are there certain partners at each fund or at each group? And it could be a family office. It could be an individual angel or it could be a VC. And I start to see who at what partner or associate would like resonates, like looks like they've made investments in similar. They've invested in Turo and Uber and Airbnb and similar other marketplaces. And so I will start to identify those. And then I go back to my LinkedIn and see who do I know, mm-hmm, that knows any of those people. And I start asking for favors, like, can you introduce me to Susan? And I start to try to make a network or a connection, a link into those individuals. And then I usually have a preset email that I will allow those individuals to send on my behalf. Like, oh, hey, I'd like to introduce you to Jason. And it has a little synopsis of what we're doing. And then go from there. It's just setting up appointments and either getting in and pitching. And that's the easy part. Easy part is building the pitch deck and going in and talking to potential investors. The difficult part really is setting up all the appointments. I could pitch 10 hours a day, 7 days a week for months and hit hundreds of investors if I could. Yes. The hard part is like getting that all set up.
Now, for the benefit of our listeners, it's harder to actually raise money from venture capitalists than it is to get into Harvard Business School or the most competitive business schools, law schools, medical schools in the United States. So number one, you start at the top of the top of the pyramid, the venture capital firms. But then below the venture capital firms, you mentioned family offices. Tell us about family offices. Yeah. I have some working familiarity with family offices.
Family offices are really interesting. Like, the reason I like family offices is because they tend to like invest more around like a thesis, or they may have a particular interest or a market that they're interested in investing in. And they tend to be surrounded around one family, hence family office is right. A wealthy family. And usually either they vet out deals and make the place investment themselves, or they may have a manager or even a team, a full office that manages their capital for them. They're a little bit more difficult to find. There's not like I can get 500. I can get a list of 500 VCs. I do not have a list of 500 family offices. I don't necessarily target family offices. They tend to pop up like I may be speaking at an event or hosting something or just at a networking, and you tend to just meet those right. individuals. Mm-hmm. I don't know of any strategy to like seek them out. Mm-hmm. But it is interesting. It's an interesting group.
Now, what about private equity firms? I hear some entrepreneurs saying that private equity firms are one of the sources of capital for them. Have you found that to be the case?
I haven't, but I think it just depends on like your stage of growth particularly, but like at an early stage, it doesn't make as much sense. As neither does like debt financing, number of groups. I mean, I think it's unsolicited and probably spammers, but you know, I'll get pinged all the time, like to take debt financing and mm-hmm. Debt financing at this stage at like where we're proving out concepts and product market fit. And if you think about like Facebook, for example, they had to get millions of users and they were around for 10 years with billions of dollars of investment before they started even having any revenue. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to say we're like them, but like there is a point of us building this network, a network of users that have a shared vision and value of like wanting to be collaborative and share their things with their neighbors. It takes a little bit of time. And so like debt financing, private equity don't match well with like what we are. We need a venture capitalist that has a big vision that wants to do something that's game changing. And a family office can have that as well.
Changing gears a little bit. What is the role of an accelerator? Maybe for the benefit of our listeners, explain to us what an accelerator is. It would seem to me that Utilize probably has not had the need to work with an accelerator. But tell us what an accelerator is. What kind of an entrepreneur with a vision would most benefit from working with an accelerator?
Yeah, accelerators can be really great, and there are some like amazing accelerators around the country. You know, one being in your area, Y Combinator is probably the most famous one. They help you take your idea and put meat on the bone and help you like get a good strategy to go to market. Most times, like it is usually a pretty early stage, but some accelerators would like a later stage company that they can help grow. But they surround you with a number of experts in that space. They give you guidance. So most people who go to an accelerator are early stage, you know, first-time founders, maybe second-time founders. But they do open up, if you go to the right accelerator, can open up connections to investors and potential hires, even more than the capital that they provide is a lot of the benefit you get out of an accelerator. Mm-hmm. Some accelerators, you can go there with just an idea and they'll help you build your whole team, or they may even offer services for equity, like, hey, we'll help you do your marketing, we're going to help you do your dev work. They may actually do pieces of your business for you for equity.
Well, Jason, in the remaining few minutes of the podcast, and I think you've answered most of the essential components that you would expect to find in a venture capital pitch book. Obviously, this is not your first rodeo, and you've probably done this many times. Again, I come back to those two concepts, execution and traction. But in the remaining couple of minutes of the podcast, what are your closing thoughts for our listeners, and when can our listeners expect to start using Utilize for all of that excess equipment they have sitting in their garage? It could be surfboards, it could be ski equipment, it could be anything.
Sure.
What are the next steps in the closing minutes of the podcast? What are the next steps for Utilize?
Well, I'd love to have anybody listening, they can go download the app right now. Utilize is spelled Y-O-O-D-L-I-Z-E. And you can find it at utilize.com, and it'll take a link to the app, or just go to the Google Play Store or the Apple Store. You can find us on LinkedIn. You can find me personally on LinkedIn. I'd be happy to chat with anybody. Jason Fairborn on LinkedIn. But really, like in your area, Jim, like we've just launched that area. And one interesting thing that's happened by opening up Hawaii and San Francisco, we've allowed people to download the app around the country. And we have thousands of people now downloading the app around the country organically. And so we're working on our go-to-market strategy to be across the country. And we'll probably start executing on that early next year, maybe the end of Q1, Q2, depending on how our raise goes.
Very exciting. Do you have an X handle?
I don't. I mean, it's Jason Fairborn, but I'm not active on it.
I see. And what about other social media? Facebook, Instagram, TikTok?
It's Utilize. Yeah, it's Utilize on all of those.
So yeah. Utilize is on Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok.
Yep, that's correct.
Okay. Well, Jason, this has been a very informative and fun discussion that we've had today. You're bringing the shared community to everyone's own doorstep, either as a supplier or a user or both. And once again, thank you so much for joining us.
Much appreciated. Thank you, Jim.
And for our listeners, today is the first in a new series showcasing startup companies and their founders. The San Francisco Experience is featured on Apple Podcast, Spotify, Pandora, YouTube, 18 platforms in total, with listeners in 60 countries. FeedSpot has recently recognized us as a top 25 California news podcast. This has been the San Francisco Experience with Jim Herlihy, coming to you from San Francisco.